Okay. All right. So so when Anusha asked me to come and give a talk, and I said I'd come and talk, say something about yoga and Ayurveda, and then when I actually thought about what I'd agreed to, I was like, oh, wow, that's a big subject area to commit to. And so it took me a while to kind of work out how to focus this. And I like to think of myself as a practical person. And so I wanted to hopefully make it more like a practically oriented session around like promoting health through yoga and Ayurveda. So I've been a student of yoga for a long time, and sometimes do some teaching. And I've also had a special interest in yoga therapy and Ayurveda. And I'm also a physiotherapist. And I've been aware over the years, to me it seems so familiar, yoga therapy and Ayurveda, but when I speak to people, often they're not so familiar with that terminology. So I wanted to just make everyone a bit more familiar with those paradigms, and with the ultimate goal that maybe you'd like to explore that further to increase your own health. So it seems obvious that we'd all be really interested in our health and, you know, have an idea that it's a good thing to look after. But in my experience, it's easier to think about that than it is actually to do anything about it. And definitely I've worked in aged care for the last part of my career, and I think at that later part of life, it can be a very challenging time, and we're all living for longer and longer, which is great. But in the last 20 years of your life, you can't walk or kind of go to the toilet by yourself or, you know, this kind of thing, then, you know, you're really compromised. So I've become really interested in looking at lifespan health and really finding ways to nurture our own health and empower ourselves to do that from an earlier age. So we don't, I think when we end up in a health crisis or really like an advanced age, it's not the best time to start looking at that like, oh, I wish I'd really looked at this earlier. So I think while we're in a really good health, it's a really good time to take these things up. So I'll tell you a little bit about my own journey with yoga and Ayurveda, and hopefully that will illustrate some of the benefits. So I started practicing yoga about 15 years ago because I had lower back pain. I was listening to the radio this week and someone just mentioned that about 80% of people have lower back pain now. And so I Googled that because I thought, wow, that sounds really radical. 80% of people have lower back pain. And someone has done a research study and apparently it's 80% of Americans now have lower back pain. It's a huge amount of people to be experiencing that. And so I too was a lower back pain sufferer, and this is what brought me to yoga. So I was looking for something to help myself, and I just was very fortunate because I really don't like exercising at all, I must confess, and I really am not drawn to going to the gym or doing actually any form of exercise. My partner gets really horrified by my, he thinks I'm like a sloth human. And so, but I really wanted to do something because this back pain was really bringing me down, and a friend took me to a yoga class, and really from the start I really enjoyed practicing yoga. And I was thinking about this today and I thought maybe it's because you get to lie down on the floor a lot, and I'm not sure, maybe that's what drew me in, but I always really enjoyed it. And fortunately for me, I met a really amazing teacher who was also an experienced in offering yoga therapy, and I didn't really know what that was at the time. So I started going to some yoga classes, and over time I knew that this guy was doing yoga therapy. What's that? Oh, I've still got some back pain. So I decided to go along for a private session. And basically in the yoga therapy session, the teacher gave me an examination, which was quite, you know, like quite scientific, almost like a, you know, looking at different movements in the body. It wasn't like, sometimes we can think of yoga as being like a bit mystical or something, a bit esoteric, but it was very practical, very down to earth. And he like gave me a yoga practice, which was like I think of it now as like a yoga prescription. So when we go to the doctors and they give us some prescription, this was a similar thing. He gave me an examination and then he gave me a yoga prescription that I had to go off to do at home. And so this sounds really like a great thing, you know, and I was very enthusiastic about yoga and I've been enjoying yoga classes. But I will admit, I found it very hard to start a home practice at the time, because going along with my sloth-like nature, I think I'm naturally quite lazy and undisciplined, as most of us are. And when I was faced with this, the yoga prescription that I knew I had to do it at home to get better, I found it really overwhelming at first. And I just wanted to talk about this because, you know, now I'm a yoga therapist and I can see it's something that people really struggle with. They come to me and they're really enthusiastic to get better and I'll give the yoga prescription. But I can see that for most of us, it's really hard to do a daily practice of anything. So I like to think of myself as a good example. Like if I can do it, I think actually anyone can do it. So I somehow kept going, and I can't say I practiced every day like I was supposed to, but somehow I did enough. I went regularly enough to really notice a difference, and I got a lot better with my back pain. And then also, actually, yes, my life got a lot better as well. And so not only did my back pain got better, but I noticed lots of other changes in my life. And I'm sure that lots of people here, if you're practicing meditation regularly, you'd have this experience as well of these kind of other benefits. So like changes in lifestyle, etc. And this inspired me eventually to start doing yoga teacher training. And I eventually went to India in 2005 as part of that. And this was to do a yoga therapy course. And I didn't actually really think about it. I just wanted to go to India and hang out with my yoga friends. And I didn't really think about what I'd be doing that much. But when we got to India, it was there at the school of my teacher's teacher, who was a teacher called TKV Desikachar, if anyone's heard of him. And at the yoga school, it was actually like a yoga hospital. And people would actually come from all over India who'd heard about like the yoga hospital in Chennai and go to get their yoga prescriptions. And every afternoon in the course, like I just thought we'd go and it'd be more like, you know, when you go to a school or something here and they give you oh yeah, if someone hurts their arm, gives them this pose, gives them a warrior pose, and if they do this, and if they're pregnant, do this. It was so not like that. In the afternoon, all these people would come, like case studies, who'd had the healing benefit from the yoga prescription. And I think that in the culture, the people are more like disciplined and have more respect for the teachers. And so they would actually do their practice every day. And so they got really amazing benefit. And it was things like people who had literally been told they'd never recover. So from a Western idea of diseases, like they had people with really profound epilepsy who'd had recovery, you know, really severe neurological disorders, things like lupus and Parkinson's, or really severe asthma that, you know, really life-limiting there was people who'd been to all different specialists and been told there was no hope, and they'd ended up at the yoga hospital. I'm calling it yoga hospital. No one else calls it that, but I'm going to call it that. And as a last resort. And these people were like crying. They were so happy and grateful. And I like cried every day. I just like could always cry now thinking about it. It just totally blew my mind. I was not expecting this. And I just thought it was so fascinating. And when you saw what they'd done, they showed us the practice that they'd done. It was literally like, oh, well, I had to do it. Inhale, exhale. You're like, and that cured you of that life-threatening illness. You know, it wasn't anything. It wasn't like do handstand for 10 minutes, 3 times a day or something. It was really simple things. I just thought it was so fascinating. And it was so inspiring to see all these people get cured. And at the same time, I did a lot, had my first big experience of Ayurvedic treatment on this trip. So it was a big trip for me. And I came back and I was in an office job at the time. And I just thought that's very interesting. It's very inspiring. But, you know, I could never do anything like that. But it really planted the seed for me. And so when I got back, I carried on doing my yoga practice. I was a bit more committed then. I was like, yeah, this is really it. I had more faith in it. And I'd also had more experience of Ayurveda. So I find like lots of people haven't heard so much of Ayurveda. It's less common here. But to explain it, sometimes I explain it as saying it's like traditional Indian medicine. So we have lots of people have heard of traditional Chinese medicine. Ayurveda is more like traditional Indian medicine. But it's very practical and it's very simple in a way. It looks a lot at like diet, just looking at like eating the right food, and more encourages you to kind of live in harmony with your own nature, like knowing yourself, living in harmony with your, knowing your own nature, I'll call it, like your own self, living in harmony with that. And then also living in harmony with the external nature, so living in a rhythm of the day and living with the seasons, eating seasonal food, you know, getting up early, going to bed quite early, this kind of thing. And there might be some herbs involved in that, and they also have all these detox treatments and massages and such like. So that's just Ayurveda in a nutshell then. So as I came back, I was doing more Ayurveda, more yoga. And somehow I just couldn't leave this idea alone, and I eventually decided to study physiotherapy because I thought that would give me the answers about why these people got better at the yoga hospital. I was like, well, they were moving their bodies and it looked really simple. So if I study physiotherapy, I'll understand. And so I went to uni and studied physiotherapy, and it was really, really hard. And I didn't have a background in anything related to physio. But physio people are like really exercise people and like love sports and stuff. So I was like, I was a bit, you know, like the outer circle of physios with my love of lying down and doing things slowly. So, I slogged through it, and it was totally the hardest thing I've ever done. And I think it was only because of all my faith I built up in yoga and all my feeling like I'd like to start a yoga hospital one day that kept me going. And so I got through physio. And at the end of it, I actually felt a bit like, oh, is that it? I just did all this like really hard work, and I just thought I'd be like, I've got the answers. And I actually felt like more confused or anything. I didn't feel like when I was in studying yoga therapy and in India and with the yoga hospital experience, I was just so, yay. And then at the end of physio, I felt a bit like, I felt like I had a lot of information. but somehow it just wasn't quite integrated. And so for the talk, I was thinking about how to bring some yoga philosophy into that. Why is that? Why is it so inspiring from the yoga model? And why did I feel so like kind of empty at the end of looking at the physio way of looking at things? And I think that this is really like the difference between how we consider health in those two paradigms. And so from a Western perspective, how do we consider health? I think that we have like some measures of health, which would be the same for all of us in here. So like our heartbeat's supposed to be whatever, 70, and our blood pressure's supposed to be this, and our BMI's supposed to be that, and we're supposed to have that many white blood cells, and this, you know, like if you had the blood test, it's this. And we're all supposed to be the same. And with physiotherapy, definitely there's like, if you come and see me and just say, yeah, your finger hurts, I'm just gonna treat your finger, and then goodbye, come back next week, you know. It's like taking a very simple view. It's like reducing everything. It's reducing you to a finger for that interaction. Whereas I know that you're more than that. And so I think that with the view of yoga and Ayurveda, it takes a much wider view of the whole person and takes all of that into consideration. And it also considers our uniqueness as individuals. So what's good for me might be very bad for you. And it might be very good for you to do lots of headstand, and it might do me a very bad injury. Or whatever it is, it takes a much more unique approach. So it's much more complicated in a way, but that's how we get this profound healing benefit, is through being able to absorb that complexity. So in the yoga system, there's a model called the Panchamaya, which I really love. And this is really, I wanted to share that with you tonight as something from yoga philosophy that's really helped me. And it is something I really like to consider in my own life and when I'm working with people. So in the idea of the Panchamaya, it's that this idea that we're all multidimensional beings. So I'll explain it. So we have all different parts of us. And again, it's just a simple way of explaining something that's complicated. But basically, it acknowledges that we have the body. So this is the anamaya, the physical body. So this is very obvious. It's very gross. We can see it. We can move it. We definitely know it's here. And ana actually means food. And so it's like, it's nourished by the food that we eat. So in Ayurveda, this probably accounts for why the diet's so important. So if we feed our physical level with, I can't resist saying McDonald's, I'm sorry if anyone loves McDonald's, but it's maybe not the best thing to eat all the time. And if we eat, like, say we went, I always remember how to get here because of the big McDonald's. So say we left and just got the big bargain bag, whatever it is, from McDonald's and ate that in the car on the way home. That would be very bad for the anamaya. So this is the body layer. And then yoga and Ayurveda also acknowledge that this is fed by an animating force, which we would say is the prana. So prana is that which enlivens us. So the body without prana would just be a dead body. So this would be like, this would maybe have a little bit of prana, but not much. So that's the body without the prana. But the prana is what, this is why I'm able to make all these hand gestures, is the prana. And also it's this, what powers us on a deeper level. So it's what's keeping our heart beating, all those little hormones are squirting away, whatever tweak over here, tweak over there. This is from our prana, which is circulating in the body and responsible for our aliveness. And so when we are looking at health and disease in a yoga and Ayurveda model, it's really we're looking at the flow of the prana often. So where there's a blockage in the prana is where we're going to get disease problems. So it's very important. There's also an acknowledgement of the mind, so the manomaya, and this is a more subtle layer, but also in some sense the source of our health or disease. So my teachers definitely have taught me that the provocation for so many health problems we have is actually stress, which would start in the mind. And all these different layers are influencing each other all the time. So we can't separate the body, the prana, the mind. It's all in there together. And so there's an acknowledgement that the mind's also important. At a more subtle layer, we have our nature. That's how I can explain it. So this is the Vijnana Mayam. So I just had a baby recently, and I think you really see this if you have a child, that they're come out like a little person. It's hard to explain that, isn't it? Like, you could say, oh, you've got my eyes and you've got my ears, but you can see there's a nature there. Or I have a brother and a sister, for example, and we're all pretty different. So we all have a unique nature. And how do we explain that? Yoga would explain it, just saying it's from our Vijnana Mayam. So this is something which, in a sense, transcends this unique individual self of this incarnation, and we take something of that from lifetime to lifetime. So there's that, in the yoga model, as there is in Buddhism, there's an acceptance that we don't just come around once. And so that's the deeper level, and that explains why, you know, someone else could have gone in the yoga hospital in India and just been like, nah, whatever. Presumably I have something in my Vijnana Mayam which is interested in this stuff. And then the most subtle level would be our Ananda Mayam. So this is a very subtle layer of our being that we all have. And I guess I like the Buddhist idea of Buddha nature. So I think of this as Buddha nature. This is how I relate to it the best. But in the yoga model, you'd say it's the divine essence that we all are. So say the idea of the divine is the ocean, and we're like a wave. So we're still part of the ocean, and we come out as the wave, and then we'll go back to the ocean. But so the ocean is always within us. We are the ocean. We just feel like a wave, but really, it's all one. So I think that's why the yoga hospital was really powerful, because they were never just treating the asthma, they were never just treating the back pain, they were never just treating the lupus, whatever it was. They actually consider every individual as the whole, as the person with the body, the animating force within the body, the mind, and these deeper layers, what inspires us, what's gonna help us to do actually our practice, what's gonna inspire us to do that from our nature. And the Ananda Mayam, acknowledging that we all have this really powerful intelligence within us, and actually that the intelligence of life is beyond our comprehension, and we're all just doing it. We're just alive. Wow, something's happening, we're just alive. And that is so profoundly powerful and intelligent, beyond anything that we could come up with in an RCT, oh, I've got the answers. What I think Ayurveda and yoga therapy in yoga helps us to do is to connect more deeply with our own healing intelligence, with our own deeper intelligence, and kind of just activate it more fully. That's how I see the power of it, that we have it, but we need to know how to bring it out. And that, for me, that is there. Yoga and Ayurveda are really powerful for doing that. I think also there's an idea that if you're going to offer yoga or Ayurveda, that you also should be practicing it. So there's two Sanskrit words. You could be like a pandita or an acharya. So a pandita is more like just you have a lot of knowledge, you've read lots of books, and you're just going, oh, yeah, just take this, and I think it'll probably work. Whereas the acharya is someone who's actually walked that path, and they've actually gained the knowledge from their own like practice, and have actually experienced something on a higher level. So I think that's really inspiring. So when you meet these people, for example, I have an Ayurvedic doctor in Perth, and you just like see her, and you just like, I just want to be like you. I just want to have what you've got, because she's been practicing Ayurveda for such a long time, and she's just got this kind of like amazing glow. And it's so inspiring, actually. You just feel healthier being around her. And definitely with my yoga teacher, you know, he just kind of looks at you and you just... And you go, oh, okay. Okay, I'm just not going to say anything. You know, like, I don't know just what happened. He's like, okay, do this. And you just like, I'm totally going to do what you just said, because I don't know what. We didn't really have to say anything, but I know that you know what I have to do. Also, Sunday, he takes your pulse, and you just feel like so exposed. You're like, okay, I hate McDonald's, you know. And so I think that these people are really highly developed somehow. I'm sure you have this experience with the monks or Ajahn Brahm, that feeling that he has walked the path. Ajahn Brahm's not just sitting here kind of going, oh, I think you should meditate because I read it's really good for you somewhere. You know, like he has walked that path, and so we can have more faith in him. Whereas I don't think in the Western paradigm there's any actual real emphasis on that in terms of developing yourself as a person. In fact, my yoga teacher said in Chennai, quite often some like medical specialists, if they have a problem or their family is really sick, they sneak them into the yoga hospital, because he's like, oh, I know I'm a heart surgeon, but my mum's really sick with a heart problem, and there's no way I do to her what I do to all the normal people, so can you just see her at the yoga hospital? That's a true story. And so I think, yeah, there's that's the difference between the Western and the yoga model. But that's not to say that we'd all be perfect. Like, this is something I've really struggled with, because I feel like I'm definitely not perfect. And even having studied for like years and years and years, I still have had lots of physical health problems, and you know, feel like I sometimes feel like, am I ever going to really learn anything, you know? And so that brings me to another really a concept in yoga that I found really helpful, and which is the idea of effort and surrender. So in the Yoga Sutras, there's a sutra about the Sanskrit's Abhyasa and Vairagyam. And the idea is that we make all the effort that we can make, and that might seem like pretty pathetic at some times, but we're still making the effort. That might be just like to even do, you know, I have to come back to the fact that I had a baby last year. It's obviously a very life-changing situation. And so there's no way I have time to practice yoga for an hour a day or an hour and a half a day, something like that. But so for me, my best effort might be 10 minutes, you know, and that, I think we still have to take any effort that we have as being really good. And then the surrender part is that we don't really know where that's going. So we might, whatever efforts we make, we can never say it's going to end up over here. We just don't know. So we have to keep that in balance. We make all the effort that we're able to make, but we're also totally surrendered to the outcome. So I find that with the yoga practice is that we're kind of, hopefully you'll be inspired after today to commit some yoga practice every day. And it can be just feel like a huge effort. And for me, definitely in my own personal practice, it's been like times where I've felt stronger or more healthy, and then times where you feel like you're going backwards. So that's the surrender. So yeah, I just wanted to, I guess, share that as something I've found useful, especially if you're engaging in some kind of daily practice. Another thing that I think is really differentiates the Western system from the I'll say like the yoga model is the idea of relationship. So in the yoga model, hopefully we'd actually establish a relationship with a teacher or like with the Ayurvedic doctor or something like this, which is really going to help us to optimize our health outcomes. So if you only see, definitely if I go to the GP rarely, I'm just like, I'm in and out. I'm just like, give me the first GP. Thank you, bye. You know, and they have the little thing on the computer, it's fine. But this is if we want to go into that deeper level of healing, I think it is really useful to foster those relationships, and that's actually part of the healing. I think when you nurture a relationship with someone who you know has helped you in the past, as soon as you go and see them, you have that feeling that they're going to help you again. I think that this is something that we also have to nurture within ourselves. And so definitely practicing yoga or meditation, hopefully the two will be kind of together every day, is developing a much stronger, I think, relationship with ourselves and different parts of ourselves. And that this is ultimately like extremely healing. And I think when we're able to use these modalities to go through different life challenges or health issues, that relationship gets stronger. And so I think it's like doing training runs, training for a marathon. So when you've been doing that every day and overcome, like, say you have a sprained ankle or a little knee injury or some neck pain, and you kind of overcome it with your practice, you're kind of like, yeah, I can do this. And so if like a big health crisis comes up, I think that you're able to have that faith in yourself. And then hopefully you'll have a relationship with someone else outside that can help you as well. So relationships are really important to this model. Kind of touching on that in the idea of the multidimensional self as part of ourselves, so we all have this contained within us, is this like idea of it's a shraddha, it is faith. We have this feeling of faith within ourselves towards something which like really inspires us, which drives us on. So this is within like the more in the Vijnanamayam, which is more like our nature or our personality. As part of that, we all have a source of inspiration which is really deep and potentially might really inspire our lives. So this is the other thing I really wanted to share with you tonight, because it's just something which is so meaningful fall to me from these teachings. And I think by getting into that situation of a daily practice, and also by optimizing our health, maybe through something like Ayurveda, we're creating a situation with more clarity to experience this. So it's definitely within us, but we maybe have to create the circumstances for it to be more evident. So it definitely doesn't have to be related to yoga. I like to think that my Shraddha is related to yoga. Maybe I will open my yoga hospital one day. But it might be something like, you know, saving stray cats. Or it might be like for Anusha, helping with the Buddhist society. Or it might be, I don't know, I really like Fireman Sam at the moment. I don't think that's my Shraddha though. But Fireman Sam has really strong Shraddha for helping the people in Ponty Bandy. So I think that's another benefit, and also something that would be really important for healing on that deeper level. So I think that when people go to the yoga hospital in Chennai, that's kind of why it works, because it's such an inspiring place, and it really gives people that potential to connect with those parts of themselves which have the faith that they can actually get better. So I'll just round it out with one last concept that I really love from yoga philosophy. And that is, how would we know that we're connecting with our Shraddha? How do we know that we're on the right direction? How do we know that we're like kind of connecting with those higher levels? And this is something that's called Atma Tushti. And it's like translates as something like, it's like when we feel that sense of our heart opening, we feel like those little moments of inspiration, and the teaching is that that's what we should follow. And so I think it's really useful to start looking for this in our life, in like, it can be in like lots of really small moments, or we might have those really big things as well where we overcome a massive challenge or have an amazing healing experience with someone. But I think it's really useful this has been another teaching that's been really meaningful to me, to, you know, I'm not with my teacher all the time. I get definitely confused by lots of things. And so how do we know we're on the right track? How do we know that we're making progress? And so I always think of this like the Atma Tushti, like what speaks to our heart, what gives us that feeling of inspiration. And that's how we know that we're going forward into this like these higher levels, finding our Shraddha, finding our ultimate inspiration. And if you're not sure what that is, I'll finish with a quote from Chogyam Trungpa, who's a Buddhist teacher I really like. And he says that everybody loves something, even if it's only tortillas. I just had to find a way to get that in. And so I think that we can go through times of feeling like the inspiration isn't there, or I've definitely thought at times, I don't think I have that part, or I don't have Buddha nature. Everyone else has it, I don't have it. Or I think that Shraddha doesn't exist for me, I don't have that faith. But then I remember the quote from Chogyam Trungpa, and remember to enjoy the tortillas and start from there. And so that's the end of my talk. I hope that made sense, and I hope I managed to share something useful about yoga and Ayurveda. And maybe you'd be inspired to start some practice or inquire further. So there's lots of, like I said, it doesn't have to be a big, grand, hours and hours long, complicated thing. That's something I really like. For like my inner sloth, a thing I really like about the classical yoga practices and Ayurveda is that literally 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day, just making little changes over a long time can make a really big difference. And so not to feel overwhelmed, but just like to try a little thing, and then just, oh yeah, I got that feeling, keep going. And so, yeah, if anyone has any questions, I hope I'm able to answer a question.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much for tonight. It was lovely. I'm a yoga teacher and I'm a martial arts teacher. And 50 years ago, I started yoga and I was thrown out of a car and they thought I was, I was coughing blood. I was completely smashed. When I went to hospital, the yoga helped me so much, the breath, because I could actually breathe. Whereas if they, I didn't have to go on the lung machine and other things. And I just find that I teach every day, or I have classes every day, and every night I have different things on. And I find the breath is really what really saves me. When I'm exhausted from my classes, I just go home and I lie down and I do half an hour of breathing. I do different breaths. And I would like you to talk about that, please.
Right. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah, oh my gosh, I think my teacher would be like really horrified. I mean, you just gave a talk for so long and didn't actually mention the breath, so thank you. I think that's such a beautiful thing that you shared. I think from your story, that also that you cultivated the faith in your practice, that you ended up in a really terrible situation health-wise, but you had this strong connection and we're able to connect with the breath and it helps you. So in the multidimensional view of the self, I said some things about prana and the way that we move and mobilize the prana and access prana for the body is actually through the medium of the breath. And so this is why there's so many yoga practices focused on breathing. So pranayama is the breathing exercises. And when we use the breath in all the different ways, like you said that you do some different breathing practices, there's so many different ways that we can use the breath to be like more like energizing or more pacifying, or actually to work on removing the blockages in the prana. So if the body's like the grosser level and the prana's like more subtle and so it has a deeper impact. And so I think it's kind of a shame almost we think about in modern yoga, there's a lot of focus on the physical body, and it's very accessible. But the physical body is more gross, and so it's like kind of less powerful. It's the prana which is has this strong relationship to the breath, which is a lot more powerful. So in yoga therapy, definitely, it's almost, for the yoga therapy practices, the postures themselves are almost like totally secondary. Everything you do really carefully with the breath and with activating the diaphragm and such like, as this is what is where the healing lies. This is how we're going to get the actual healing benefit. And so I think like this is definitely something you have to practice. And I've definitely had students who have come to me like maybe for like a few years, and then they'll say, I've realized that it's actually the breathing that makes the difference. It's actually the breathing, that's why I'm getting better. And so I think that can be like a distraction with the postures. But if we, and this is the benefit, I think, of doing your own practice every day, you get like probably more insight into that because you'll get this more intimate relationship with your own breath. So I'd really encourage that too. Was that helpful? Did that say?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Maybe you'd show a few breath exercises because it's so simple.
Well, I guess where I always start with my students, who anyone who comes to see me actually as part of my examination, as part of my assessment process, is actually to examine the person's breathing. And I'd say maybe about once or twice a year, someone who comes actually to see me and is activating a diaphragmatic breath. So barely anyone who comes to see me for yoga therapy is even like breathing with the diaphragm. And so like from a kind of an energetic perspective, you can imagine that that's not great. So should we do some diaphragmatic breath together? This is like, I reckon that this is the bomb. This is the thing that we need to know. Everything's better if you lie down. That's what hopefully I've shared from my talk as well today. But the diaphragm is, if you can feel like the bottom of your ribs, if that's possible, but where the bottom of the ribs are. So the diaphragm actually joins onto the bottom part of the ribs, and it's three-dimensional. So it's on the back ribs, and it makes it like a dividing, it's like a big rubber. I always think it looks like a bit like a whoopee cushion. You know, like it's in the middle and it's dividing the chest cavity from the abdominal cavity. Can you imagine that? Like the whoopee cushion inside this three-dimensional space. And so actually, I'd say that most people tend to breathe more up here. And when I'll say activate more like an abdominal breath, which is how we activate the diaphragm, we can actually do abdominal breathing just by like going like this and pushing the tummy out, which isn't diaphragmatic breathing. So for diaphragmatic breathing, we actually have to like inhale and let the diaphragm descend. And so there's not any effort around the abdomen. Let's pop your hands on here. So you should just feel this bit expand. And so just taking a breath in through the nose, if you can do it through the nose, that's ideal. And the breath should ideally be expanding just quite specifically in this area. And then just let the breath go out. And then when you're ready, you can inhale again. And so there should be an sense of expansion. So where the ribs meet, actually the ribs come down like this. You should have a feeling of expanding in this area here. I find it easiest to feel at the front, but when you get better at it, it is three-dimensional. So, do you have a sense of that? The diaphragm actually moving. So this is really I've found really amazing as practicing yoga over many years is the observation of the breath is actually endless. So if you can just go home and lie down and have your knees bent, get comfy, and actually activating the diaphragmatic breath and actually just keep feeling that, and then see all the other weird things you do with your breathing through the day, you'll have a pattern that's probably not diaphragmatic breathing. So exploring that. But if you can take some time every day just to simply do some diaphragmatic breathing, huge, huge, from this system, just that alone will have a huge impact in terms of how the prana is flowing. We can agree to do this experiment together. I'll come back next year and we'll talk about the exhale. So, because that's important too, but I don't want to overwhelm you. So, inhale, diaphragmatic breath. Any other questions?
Can I just add that inhaling through the nose and exhaling through the nose is really also quite important. Because of the nitrous oxide, that we only get that if we inhale and exhale through the nose, and that's very important, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I think in some of the Qigong that I do, it's an inhale through the nose and exhale through the mouth, but it's a totally different exercise. The breath is always in and out through the nose. Yeah.
Absolutely. And in yoga, this is like really important for more like, it's to do with like controlling the flow of the prana and it's always like when you're doing the breathing exercises, there's always that element of control. And also by breathing through the nose, it has all this effect on the good effect on the air coming in. So yeah, it's a very good point. The air in yoga, ideally, always in and out through the nose. I've been having this thing, my partner's like snores really, really loud. So I'm like, in the last year, I swear to God, he has woken me up way more times than my baby's woken me up with snoring than the baby crying. And so we're looking at that thing like Buteyko breathing and all this, which is essentially just training to breathe through the nose like all the time. So, you know, he goes to bed and we stick the thing over his mouth, like, to not allow any mouth breathing. So the yogis knew this already. is there any other question?
I was just wondering, you talked a little bit about surrendering.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And yeah, I'd just like you to maybe explain some techniques that you use for that.
Yes, very, very, very bad at surrendering. And so, yeah, it's really interesting, actually, because I think, especially like culturally, we're not trained really, really well in surrender. We're a very doing culture, aren't we? So the effort bit, we've got that down so well. We can all do the effort. We can all do. But the surrender, yep. So definitely, I would just say daily yoga practice, because I think it constantly puts you in that situation of realizing, actually in a really practical, grounded way, that it's like, it's not me. I have to just allow this. This process, you realize when you start to do daily practice, how little actually you're in control to some extent. In some sense, we have like quite a lot of control. We can take control of that, do our daily practice, and we're really stepping into something there, taking control of something. But then, paradoxically, at the same time, I think then you realize you actually have no control. So I can't tell you enough, if you want to really explore that daily, like little bit of meditation or yoga practice, I think it just helps you to accept that fact that you can do all the doing. And I think that's the nice thing about the yoga practices, is it's very practical, particularly to do an actual yoga practice. It's very accessible, I think, even more than meditation, because you are kind of doing something, so to attract your mind, etc. And the doing of it will take you along that path naturally. The teaching's there. It'll teach you about effort and surrender just by doing it. So honestly, daily yoga practice is really, I think, that it's going to be my answer to everything. But I think you'll just start to understand something about that in yourself, which is beyond the mind. And that's really, ideally, that's where this would be taking us. Because we can't understand these things with the mind. We have to get to that more subtle level, I think. Even if just occasionally we'll get a little glimpse of it. And then gone. Any other questions? Can I just say, it's just been so nice having you sitting in front of me for the talk, because I was a little bit nervous, and you're just like so nice and keep smiling at me, and I just really, I'm getting a lot of Atma Tushti about you. I'm like, yes, thank you.
So I do a kriya meditation, or yoga, they call it. So it is incorporating yoga, meditation, all in together. So I find it really beneficial. Been doing it for about a year and a half. How does that impact or play with what it is that you do?
I don't know so much about. I've always been in really like one tradition of yoga, and I don't know heaps and heaps about like lots of other traditions. But I think it sounds like we're doing the same thing. I think sometimes with the kriyas, I don't know. Is that more like Kundalini yoga? Is it Kundalini yoga that has the kriyas? I'm not sure. No. So you do more like a yoga practice and a meditation?
Yeah, so it does incorporate the breath, it incorporates all the chakras, and so you're working through.
So like a visualisation?
Yeah.
Yeah, and some movement?
And movement as well, so
That sounds like a really great practice. Yeah. So I think that in the classical yoga practices that I've been more involved in, there's definitely elements of that. So some physical movement, whatever we need to do for our own body, hopefully individualized for us by a teacher who's told us what we need to do. And then definitely elements of visualization, very powerful, and the breathing, definitely, hopefully the good diaphragmatic breathing, in and out through the nose. And I'd say that's like a big differentiation between some yoga practices, is that definitely I think some either don't really emphasize the breath or definitely don't have any strong philosophy about how you breathe. Whereas in my tradition, it's so central, like having this movement of the breath and the diaphragmatic breath. And then there is a particular technique for the exhale as well, which really helps to move the prana. So I guess you have to be wary with some practices that you could be doing something quite nice and it feels good, but for that extra benefit, really working with the breath and the movement of the breath, I'd say, would be what would make the difference between it being a nice practice and having some benefit to really taking it up a level and getting some really strong health benefit from it. But definitely all the elements that you've said, that's a very classical approach, to have some physical practice and visualization and meditation and breathing all together. So it's a very limited thing to ever think of only doing a physical practice, I'd say.
Another thing, I damaged my knees a couple of years ago, probably about a year, maybe 2 years ago. So my yoga, I've been practicing yoga since I was early 20.
Yeah.
The physical yoga, that had to stop pretty much. So I'd really love to get back into it, but it's also stopped me from doing any physical, so any walking or anything that.
And was that from an injury?
Gardening.
So very common, again, very common. I've had my run-in with knee issues as well, I must say. But I definitely think that with the right yoga practice that targets that, you can definitely make a full recovery. I know that from my own knees. I had a knee problem a few years ago, and I was told, I went to see a specialist and all this and had MRIs because it was really bad, and they said you definitely need surgery. There's no way you can come out of this without surgery, and I almost believed them. But luckily I was seeing my yoga teacher really soon after that, and I showed him the MRIs and I said, and they said I need surgery, and he gave me just this look, no. And then just said, oh, just do this thing with your knee with the breathing. Seriously, 2 weeks, I was just totally better. So, this is like, I think, how you increase the faith in the practice. So, definitely, we should talk afterwards, and I could definitely help you. I'm quite sure there's lots of things you could do for your knees, all of us. Knee problems, very common. Any other questions? Hello.
Thank you, first of all, for all your everything you inspired us with. Just tracking back to the earlier question regards surrendering, when you mentioned that, it kind of explained something to me that I recently discovered, I would say, and that's that when practicing meditation or yoga, the way I understood what you said by surrendering is like, say, when we are in a state trying to relax or meditate, and then thoughts start to come through our mind. And to me, the way we kind of practice this surrendering is through self-acceptance and just like,
yeah,
accepting, you know, what's happening in your mind, or whether like the effort you're putting in is bringing out, you know, like is rewarding or not, is through acceptance essentially.
Yeah.
And yeah,
I think that's a really beautiful point, that you could just kind of get to sit with it and you see that frustration and then you get better at letting it go. And self-acceptance, something is happening, isn't it, to help you deal with that. And yeah, I guess definitely in my experience as well, I think somehow when you enter into this stuff, I don't know, I think that life somehow finds some way to make the challenge, turns up the volume a little bit so that you have like a bit more challenge. Ha ha, you thought you surrendered. You know, something like that. Okay, try this one. Or like you, for example, having an accident or something like that. I think that it's an inevitable part of life that it will ask us to make these, you know, big movements within ourselves, you know. I've been listening to this, I'll just say this quickly, I know it's 9:03. There's a really good program on Radio National called Baker and the Beast. It's in the mid-morning about a lady. It's actually following her journey. She's been diagnosed with motor neurone disease. And it's such a great program. It's really profound. Like, she's kind of talking about the process of having this extremely life-limiting diagnosis, and she has young children. I was listening to it this morning. I was so humbled. I was like, now that is surrender. Really, really. And I was thinking about giving this talk tonight, and I just thought that if we've cultivated something within our lives, something like a meditation practice or a yoga practice, or it might be a religious practice, anything, a devotion to tortillas, when we get to those really hard places, I do really think it's a great comfort and a great support. And obviously we can go through life without that, but I've just learned it's much better to go through with it, so.
I guess if we wanted to find out some more information about what you do, is there like a website or something that we might be able to access?
Yes. So, actually, there's sort of really strange. Like, I have a website and something like hacked into it, and I started getting all these like weird emails and stuff and I'm like, who has time to do this? Who cares about my website anyway? So I'll have to dig into that. But Anusha has all my details, and I am on some other website that hasn't been hacked as well. So I can definitely point anyone who's interested in the direction of really good information about Ayurveda and also yoga therapy. So, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I am a yoga therapist, and so I see private clients for yoga therapy. I'm based down in Fremantle, and I actually work out of an Ayurvedic clinic. So I work with an Ayurvedic doctor, and she has an Ayurvedic clinic, and I work from there. So if anyone is interested in yoga therapy or an individualized yoga practice, and I'm also a physiotherapist, and you'd be very disappointed if you came to me for physiotherapy, because I only work in yoga therapy. But if you have like a health fund, you can have like rebates and stuff, so that's helpful. But in terms of getting more information about yoga therapy, if people were interested, I can definitely tell you where to get more information as well. More like about the tradition that I've studied in is really like well known for being like having this amazing tradition of yoga therapy with the yoga hospital. And so if you ever get a chance to go to Chennai, definitely you have to go there. And I'll still keep working towards having one in Perth. Yeah. So thank you so much for coming and just being so lovely and receptive, and it's just a big honour to be here, so thank you.